Cholila Chibut, Argentine Republic, South America, August 10, 1902. Mrs. Davis, Ashley, Utah. My dear friend, I suppose you've thought long before this that I had forgotten you, or was dead. But, my dear friend, I am still alive. Another of my uncles died and left $30,000 to our little family of three. So I took my $10,000 and started to see a little more of the world. I visited the best cities and best parts of the countries of South America until I got here, and this part of the country looked so good that I located, and I think, for good, for I like the place better every day. I have 300 cattle, 1,500 sheep, and 28 good saddle horses, two men to do my work, also a stable, and some chickens. The only thing lacking is a cook. The climate here is a great deal milder than Ashley Valley. The summers are beautiful, never as warm as there, and grass knee-high everywhere, and lots of good, cold, mountain water. I sometimes feel very lonely.
Those are the words of a very famous Utahn. Robert Leroy Parker, alias Butch Cassidy, put pen to paper in Patagonia, Argentina in August of 1902. The outlaw was 36 years old when he wrote the letter home to Utah to a friend who lived north of Vernal, Matilda Davis. Butch had already been living in Argentina for more than a year and would go on living there for nearly another 4 years. He was homesteading a remote part of the South American outback, along with his confidant Harry Longabaugh, alias the Sundance Kid, and the woman who was almost certainly Sundance's wife, who to this day we only know by an alias, Etta Place. At the time Butch wrote this letter, Sundance and Etta had been back in the United States for more than 6 months for a visit, and Butch Cassidy may have thought that they weren't returning, though they were actually already on their way back to the little cabin that the trio had built together at the foot of the Andes Mountains. This is In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. That letter is something that I've been obsessed with for a while. I got a chance to visit the cabin where the letter was written when I lived in Argentina myself for a few years, for graduate school, not because I was a bank robber on the run. By the way, when Butch Cassidy writes,
"Another of my uncles died and left $30,000 to our little family of three. So I took my $10,000 and started to see a little more of the world."
In case you couldn't tell, he's not actually talking about an uncle. He's talking about the Winnemucca bank robbery, a final big heist that bankrolled, literally, the trio's flight to South America and served as their stake for starting over, for creating new lives away from the long arm of the law. When I visited the cabin that Butch and Sundance and Etta built, it was still standing as a beautifully dilapidated piece of history. It was listing to one side, and there were still pieces of crumbling, patterned wallpaper on the cabin walls. Grass surrounded the main structure and the small workhouse to its side, and a creek cut through the property behind the cabin, which was situated in the rolling hills of a long Patagonian valley, still only sparsely populated. The structure has since been rebuilt by the government of the province of Chubut, and now it feels more modern than, well, than it should. But in any case, it's the place from which Butch Cassidy wrote this letter that got sent to Utah, and that earlier this week I got to look at.
What is this?
This is a letter written by, everybody knows as Butch Cassidy, to a woman, and I believe she was in Heber Valley or Heber City.
Ashley Valley, up above Vernal. I'm obsessed with it,
so yeah,
I know.
So yeah. Matilda Davis was her name. He was in South America hiding out, Argentina specifically, and he wrote this letter from there to Mrs. Davis.
The letter is one of thousands of artifacts that is held by the state of Utah in its archives at the historic Rio Grande Depot on 300 South.
Sabrina Sanders, the Artifacts Collections Manager.
Would you describe where we are?
So we are in the basement of the Rio Grande, which has been created to house our collections from the Historical Society. So we're in the room that houses the artifacts collection. because the collections are kind of divided up into types. So you have photographs, manuscripts, artifacts, maps, architectural drawings. So, but this room is all artifacts. And it's a large room with cement ceilings that are covered with all kinds of pipes and wires and electrical to go up into the rest of the building. So as typical basements, you know, right. But that's right above all of the objects.
Here's the thing. I don't think Sabrina is doing the description of the Dickensian looking basement we're in justice. Old pipes are running around everywhere. They're steam pipes and sewage pipes, and everything has a fine layer of dust on it. And the treasures of Utah's past are there. Some of them, because they're weirdly sized or don't fit on any particular shelves, are just sort of strewn about. For you Harry Potter fans, it's like looking through the Room of Requirements at Hogwarts, except with weird old Utah stuff, like...
Yeah, you have the Butch Cassidy letter. We've got a lot of mining-related items. We have television tubes from Philo Farnsworth. This is a chair from the Ladies Literary Club. A couple practice grenades, as we found out later on. Very early version of a shower that we don't think today, a little bit different, but same sort of concept.
One of the reasons I wanted to visit these archives, in addition to Butch Cassidy's letter, was because for the past year or so, I've been hearing that a new building is in the works for all of these historic objects, manuscripts, textiles, and so on from the Beehive State's storied past. In the basement of the Rio Grande Depot, I got a chance to speak for a few minutes with Jill Love, director of the Utah Department of Heritage and Arts, about the future in store for Utah's history.
Would you mind giving me your name and title?
Jill Love, and I'm the director of the Department of Heritage and Arts.
Okay. And Jill, my understanding is that the department is going to be getting a new facility, a new building, or, I mean, that's the word on the street. I guess you're hopeful for that. I know there's an appropriations request. Why is a new building necessary for the collections that you house here and for your department that you lead?
So all of the state's historical artifacts, manuscripts, photographs are stored in the basement of the Rio Grande Depot. And there are things like a sewer pipe right above the state's first flag. Just today, we have water seeping through the floor and a flood in one area. We're constantly battling things like an outdated generator to keep 100-year-old nitrate photographs in freezers. The conditions are woefully inadequate for the state's precious artifacts and items that tell our state's history.
How long has the department been trying to get a new building? I mean, this is kind of a long time coming, isn't it?
So I can say that we dug out the basement of the Rio Grande in the 1980s, and that's when the collections were moved in here. But this hasn't, you know, it doesn't have any climate control. It's not the right humidity. It's never been an adequate storage center.
Am I right that for a period of time, the option that the state of Utah was looking at was to move just next door to the old side of the old road home?
Right. So we, knowing that tax dollars are a very precious thing, proposed a modest solution that would just really build a collection center to store the artifacts in, and it would have given us some modest gallery space, but not a lot. And it was really the legislature that came to us or shared their vision that if we were going to build a place to store the collections, we should build a place to share them and tell Utah stories. And so that's where the idea of a Utah History Museum came from. We're one of two states without a state history museum.
Wow. Why are we one of two states without a state history museum? Especially in a place where, you know, we have a genealogical focus. There's a lot of emphasis on history. It just hasn't happened yet.
And possibly that's it. Maybe for a long time there was a thought that there were other institutions telling the state's history, but what we know is our story is rich and diverse, and we want to share all of our history and not just one storyline.
So there's going to be a new building at the Capitol complex is the idea.
Yeah, so the old state office building, which is just north of the state capitol, will be demolished next year after the legislative session. Beginning in the next 6 months or so, design for a new building, which will include a museum, will start happening.
A new museum. So that's a way to display items that are down here in this basement that maybe aren't getting public viewing right now, right?
It's a way to display those items, but also to share Utah stories.
In terms of the way that, you know, the artifacts are stored now versus the way that they will be stored in the new facility, is there a lot of, I mean, what I'm imagining that an upgrade in the kind of even boxes that things are stored in is
and shelving, for instance. We've had shelving collapse at our employees. So yes, we'll have a state-of-the-art facility that will have the right humidity, the right temperatures, the right shelving that will allow us to access those artifacts. Even right now, we really can't get to a lot of them because of the way they're stored. And so this will provide us much more meaningful access for researchers and for folks curating exhibits.
How much is it going to cost? And are you a standalone facility, or will you be wrapped in with other things?
We are wrapped in with an office building that will mainly serve other capital functions, including the legislature and executive branch functions. And I can't tell you right now what the museum will cost. I couldn't pull those costs out of the overall project budget.
Is it a done deal? Is it going to happen?
Yeah, I think it is a done deal. I think maybe what isn't completely decided is the timing of it. Right now, the plans are that the building would open in 2023. There may be a decision to delay that so that they can pay for this over time. But it's definitely plans are well underway in turning, including architectural programming for the building and interpretive planning for the museum.
Congratulations, I guess, is in order.
Yeah.
So congrats.
We're really excited about it. So,
Jill Love, thanks very much for making time.
Thanks.
Okay. As you just heard from Jill Love, director of the State Department of Heritage and Arts, there are some issues with the way artifacts are currently held that go beyond what meets the eye. When we come back after a short break, we'll hear a bit more about those issues, and we'll get a tour of some of the interesting items that are currently in the basement of the Rio Grande Depot, but that will, in the coming years, be moved to a more modern facility on Utah's Capitol Hill. This is In the Hive on KCPW. Back in just a minute.
Hey listeners, Natalie Gochner here. KCPW's Both Sides of the Aisle is going to present its first ever live show later this month. We'd love to have you be there. After the dust of the legislative session settles, we'll be looking back at what happened. And we'll have our typical lively discussion about what it all means. Join me, Senator Dan McKay, Councilwoman Shireen Gorbani, and a couple of guests. Monday, March 23rd at the Salt Lake City Public Library's main auditorium. Further details at KCPW's website. Hope to see you there.
Our lives have become more and more automated, from driverless vehicles to apps that pay your bills to even spell check. But some things can't be done by artificial intelligence, like bringing you the news. That still takes people with training, guts, and genuine intelligence. It takes real people to look beneath the surface and find the real story. And your financial support makes it possible. Machines are good, but people are better. Make a gift today at kcpw.org.
Welcome back to In the Hive. I'm Roger McDonough. As we often say, this show, in a general sense, is about the issues and ideas that tie Utah together. Utah history, the stuff and stories of Utah's past, are the focus of today's show. When we left off, we had been looking at a letter the famous Utah-born outlaw Butch Cassidy sent to a friend from South America in 1902. And we heard from Jill Love, director of the Utah Department of Heritage and Arts, about plans for a new building. Because Utah's historic artifacts and papers and old clothes and mining equipment and so much more is currently housed in the dank and dusty basement of the Rio Grande Depot, which, in a way, is an artifact in its own right. There are some nascent plans afoot to turn the whole building into a year-round market for Utah-made farm goods and produce. That's a topic for another show. Now, though, we're going to get a tour of some of those collections, some interesting items that are currently squirreled away in the old train station's basement, which, by the way, was dug out in the 1980s for this express purpose. And along the way, we'll hear some of the reasons why getting Utah's gathered history out of that basement is a pressing concern. Our tour guides...
Sabrina Sanders, the Artifacts Collections Manager.
Doug Meisner, I'm the Library and Collections Manager for State History.
Can we look around at a few things just to like highlight what the collection holds and what, you know, what the sort of treasures that are down here that will now have a place to go? Sorry, the Butch Cassidy letter to me is, of course, really exciting.
Yeah, you have the Butch Cassidy letter. We've got a lot of mining-related items. We have television tubes from Philo Farnsworth.
Wow. Credited with being a pioneer in making television happen, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, pioneer in the field of communications television, you know, credited with inventing television. So we have over 100 tubes from the collection. These are the little ones, but we have some pretty big ones as well. You know, a lot of these things have interesting stories. The chest that says Ute Last Squad is interesting. That was a group of World War I veterans that came together, formed their organization to preserve their memories. They collected materials, put them in the chest. When there were only 8 members of the organization, of the group left, they donated it to state history. So that chest, you know, had things like uniform pieces like buttons and belts and things, but then it had like hand grenades and a couple of practice grenades, as we found out later on, but, you know, dentures and medals and maps and all sorts of things. You know, you're going to find other things here, you know, desks. This desk is from the state capitol.
This roll top desk.
Yeah, this roll top desk. Oh. We have some artwork here. We have a sign from the Lincoln Highway.
Oh, cool.
The first cross country highway was created. And this sign here is our little piece of it. Not too many of these around, but yeah, you can see the Lincoln Highway, Utah, Nevada, New York, San Francisco. So,
can I ask a simple question, which is how big is the artifact collection?
Well, we're over what?
We're over 30,000 objects
in the collection management system. So yeah, you know, we continue to collect, so that'll grow. But people are always getting in touch with us wanting to donate. And so we have to be careful. As you can see, we're pretty full. I think the locked cabinet's probably a good thing to show them.
Yeah. Let's do it, whatever it is.
Yes, you're right. I don't know which one's in which.
What's the strange skeleton key, do you know?
I don't. So everything has a number, mm-hmm. and then that number is called its catalog number. And so that usually, the first 4 digits of that catalog number are the year that it was brought into the collection. So that kind of gives you a nice clue. So like this number is 1981-48-4. So this came to us in 1981.
Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yeah, so Peter Tomich was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor posthumously. He was on the USS Utah in Pearl Harbor, and he was a hero. He actually worked down in it. Was it in the boiler room?
Chief boiler's mate. During the attack, he stayed at his station and kept things going, made sure that the boilers didn't explode and everything. It kept them secure. So giving his shipmates time to get off the ship, and yeah, he then drowned.
Wow. I was reading an article written maybe last year about the appropriation that they're doing for the building, and it described that somewhere there's a framed lock of Brigham Young's hair.
So it's from our Sousa Young Gates collection. I made a small exhibit. It was called Roll Call, and it was about Utah fearless females. And Sousa Young Gates was one of the women I highlighted, and I did have that framed Brigham Young's hair up for that, which was fun.
That's amazing.
So she basically framed it and a lock of her mother's hair braided, and it was for the first relic haul. So that was like their first foray into bringing items together and displaying them. I want to say it was at the Lion House.
Okay. What is, I mean, just so the listeners can hear what it is we're looking at, what is this?
We're looking at a cage, essentially. sort of a semicircle that has pipes and shower heads, so it gets you at all the different angles. Very early version of a shower that we don't think today, a little bit different, but the same sort of concept where it's different shower heads and everything.
I
but
mean, this spraying at you from all angles, it looks like.
Yep. And it was in the Kearns Mansion, so when they built the Kearns Mansion. But yeah, they removed it.
Why?
Well, the story goes, is what I've been told, that Governor Matheson really didn't like the showers, never had a comfortable shower in that. And you can believe it. Pipes all around. And it's just not a good idea for, you know, modern shower. So
a steampunk shower.
Yeah. It looks like a steampunk shower.
This is a piece of furniture that came from Topaz, the relocation camp. So this, the family had this at Topaz. They took it with them when they left and then donated it to state history. So it's made from pieces of scrap wood and so on, and just to make this little hutch.
And it was made at Topaz?
Yes.
Wow, that's really neat. There's a throne of some sort.
This is a chair from the Ladies Literary Club. This was the president's chair.
We have some of the programs and schedules from the Ladies Literary Club in our pamphlet collection. And they're really great because you can see how robust their organizing and basically it was to get together to learn and be more literate and share knowledge. They started a library, which is what those books got donated to create the Salt Lake Library. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, the women who were in the club would take on projects and do research and then give presentations. Yes. So it was like almost a way for women to get together and learn and get educated and be more literate, basically.
Yeah, in a situation where maybe they didn't have the more formal opportunities, depending upon the year, I guess. I mean, as they progress through. But, yeah.
To leave and go to college, it's difficult. But if you're a curious person and you wanna, you know, continue that kind of education, and it was a club where you could join, and they did that.
This is a sad question to ask, but do you have, you know, horror stories, some disasters that have happened where things have been leaked on or dusted?
Yeah.
You have the stories? Yes. Do you want to share any of them?
Actually, whilst I was working here, it was probably 2014, in this back corner here, which we didn't notice it at first because it's in a back corner, but there was a small water drip happening, and luckily one of the interns saw it, because it turned into a gushing stream of water that we just panicked and grabbed a giant garbage can and held it up in the air underneath it. And then I remembered there were folks working up outside on the sprinkler system. And so I ran up there, and they had hooked a hose up to a spigot in the foyer and turned the spigot on, and it was just running down into the floor, and they didn't know. And they ran the hose outside to do work out in the landscaping.
So you found the problem.
Yeah, I ran up there and was like, turn it off. but it did create some water damage on a number of things. And so we had to pull everything out into the hallway, put up a bunch of folding tables, put everything out, get a bunch of fans, properly try to dry anything we could with paper towels. We even had some water damage in the other room, which had books and paper items. And so, again, it was a big triage moment where we're pulling out a bunch of, you know, folding tables, laying everything out, getting fans going, interleaving pages with, you know, absorbent other pages so that books and papers can dry without getting smudged and smeared out with the ink. And it's basically, it's like a triage moment.
Do you have other similar sort of disaster stories, or is that the biggest one that you have from your past?
You know, the flooding incidents in this room and the room across the hallway were bad, but we've dealt with an electrical cabinet burnt out, and so there was, you know, you could kind of see smoke in the hallway, and, you know, that was scary, but it didn't turn out to be anything, but we're like, ah, I smell smoke. But then, you know, we had, little things... because we sit under a restaurant, we sit under the restrooms. Oftentimes, water would seep through the ceiling, down the pipes, into our spaces. I mean, we've just had those issues where you're always worried about flooding. You're worried about fire. You're worried about pests. You know, you're worried about, you know, a sewage pipe breaking, a steam pipe. As you can see, we have steam pipes running through the room. We've had valves break, you know, and leak water and other things. So it's just that constant worry. And then, of course, you're in an unreinforced masonry building, and, you know, we're in a liquefaction zone. And so you worry, you know, they always sort of talk about the, you know, the big one that we're overdue for. And you worry about earthquakes. So, you know, in this building, in our storage situation as it is, those are just all things that we have to worry about. And it has certainly caused staff some sleepless nights because of what could happen. And then those occasions when something does happen, you have to respond quickly. And so it has certainly caused a lot of stress and worry. But those are all the things that we sort of think about down here.
Do you all just walk through here sometimes and kind of like, my temptation would be to just like constantly come and visit all of the collections. Is that something that you do? I mean, as the...
Yeah, and I call it rabbit holes because I'll start with looking at for one thing and then I'll find something next to it and then I'll wonder about its history and then I'll go, you know, over to our CMS and then I start looking at references and then, oh, that's related to this person. Oh, I think we have photographs of that. And then, you know, so it's so great to see how the different collections we have come together and relate and tell a full story about either an event or a person. And it really, seeing the real object is always much more, I guess I want to say guttural. It's like a much more intense experience to make you think about somebody holding this gun and using this gun much more than a photo will ever do. Mm. And, you know, artwork is the same way, I think. You see a picture of an artwork, but actually stand next to, even though it's 2D and it's a painting on the wall, it's just something different to actually experience it in person.
Yeah. It's like your reaction to the Butch Cassidy letter. You know, and you actually see the letter, read the letter.
Yeah. No, without a doubt, without a doubt.
So that's what gets me jazzed.
I just wonder if you find your way back to where you started when you're going down the road.
Right.
There's more to the state of Utah's history archives than the mountain of items stored in the basement of the Rio Grande Depot. If you are interested in Utah history, be sure to check out the state's digital archives at history.utah.gov. Everything from old photographs of the street you live on and turn-of-the-century bathers at the old Salt Air, to any number of articles written about the topics that have defined the Beehive State's unique history, can be found at those digital archives. Again, that's history.utah.gov. Thanks for listening to In the Hive here on KCPW, a listener-supported, independent public radio resource. A couple of thank yous. My friend Rob DeBurk played the part of Butch Cassidy at the beginning of the show. And for the record, I think he'd make a marvelous outlaw. Thanks, Rob. Thanks also to Andrew Shaw, who composed our theme music. You can find podcasts of this and all of our local shows at kcpw.org. or wherever you download your podcasts. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks to you for listening, and please join us again next week.